Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Nancy Ryan. Ryan rocks it Asbury Park style. Another Thursday. I'm telling you, I've been doing this for a long time now. It's like over, oh my gosh, 6 years, 6 years, and maybe, I don't know, September, October, November, whatever. It's a lot of months. Maybe 6 years and 4 months. But I have a wonderful guest this evening. So without further ado, and I know that's cliche, I have the wonderful Mr. John Harrington, who I've been listening to forever because I am a 60s generation person. And he's not only with the iconic band Steely Dan, but he's got his own band as well, the John Harrington Band. And I know he plays with a lot of people, including our Jeff Levine, who lives right down here at Jersey Shore. So, John, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nancy. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you because I, we were supposed to do this a few years ago, and unfortunately you were unable to come on, so I was so happy. I definitely trotted myself right over to the Brighton Bar when I saw you were going to be playing Tuesday with Jeff Levine, JT Bowie. I was on a mission that night, and I'm so glad that when I asked you to come on, you said yes. So,
well, we had a nice show. We had a nice show over there at the Brighton. It was probably our best yet. I think it was. We did a little quick rehearsing that afternoon, and Jeff had some cool new tunes to play, and I had a ball. It was fun.
Yeah, it was really terrific. It was really terrific, and it's always nice to see so many like world-renowned musicians on the same stage in a little town, you know, a small little town along the Jersey Shore, which we're known for, of course. I still say that Asbury Park should be, you know, nominated or actually win to be the music capital of at least the United States.
But anyway, well, you know, going to Brighton. Going to the Brighton is like going home for me because I don't know if you know, but I was raised in West Long Branch, New Jersey. So that was kind of a hangout as soon as we were old enough to get into a bar. And when I was a kid, it was 18, not 21. So we did some serious hanging at the Brighton for a long, long time. And so it's like going home again for me. And it's really fun.
That's right. And I grew up in Asbury Park, but I live in West Long Branch right now. I live over right off Locust Avenue. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm right in the thick of it. I like West Long Branch. It's really nice. And I like West End. They don't call it West End anymore. I'm upset about
that
because my grandmother lived, they call it Long Branch. My grandmother lived right in that first, those wooden buildings. Oh, gosh, don't have have people calling me, but anyway, my grandmother, my father's mother, lived in those wooden buildings that burnt down that were right across the street from the park, and like one half block in, not even a half block in, from Ocean Avenue, and so I remember being in those apartments like growing up. And then she moved over here to where I am, and so we used to pick her up here. She came to dinner every Sunday. But the first question I want to ask you so we can move along and have listen to your stories of traveling the world and playing for thousands and billions of people is, who influenced you the most while you were growing up, and why?
Well, that's a difficult question. I mean, there was music in the family. My older brother played piano and took lessons, and my parents tried to give me piano lessons, which I didn't really take to, but I did them for a while. And then I played saxophone as a kid. So, you know, there was some family influence, I would say, even from the time I was a little kid. And my parents listened to records, and they had some pretty cool records from the time. And, you know, I would say probably my biggest influence was, earliest influence was probably AM radio. I mean, I just fell in love with you know, the Four Seasons, the Beach Boys, with Motown. I mean, all the stuff that was on the radio in the early and mid 60s, you know, which was kind of, you know, forming my musical taste, I think, you know, before I even knew what such a thing was. And, you know, by the time by the time I was about 13, I guess, maybe in eighth grade, maybe around 1968 or something, there had been a serious shift from, the Beatles had been on Ed Sullivan already, and I had built my cardboard cutout guitars, and I was jumping up and down playing my 45s in the basement, you know. But soon after that, there was a shift, as you remember, from AM radio to FM radio, which was in stereo and had a much cooler sound, much better sound. And, and you know, they introduced kind of a long play album format, rather than the singles format of AM radio, of hit radio. And so all of a sudden, you know, we were just transported into this world of mostly British Invasion rock, you know. And so when I became a guitar player, which was around eighth grade, I started playing. My biggest influences are probably best summed up by, like, my first shopping trip for LPs. I had been buying, you know, 45s for years, like I said, Four Seasons, Beach Boys, Beatles, some Motown stuff, Stevie Wonder, early Stevie Wonder stuff. But when I went on a shopping trip and I had saved my allowance for a few weeks to be able to buy, like, my first three albums, the ones I picked were Jimi Hendrix's Are You Experienced, Cream's Disraeli Gears, and the Beatles' White Album. And I bought them all on the same shop. I guess to this day, you know, those are probably they really do sum up my most powerful, you know, especially my guitar influences. You know, the stuff, I mean, the sounds I go to, the kinds of tunes I like to try to write, the sort of band vibe that I like, all of that was really pretty much perfectly summed up by those records. And right. So I would probably say that time, like the British Invasion and FM radio, were my biggest influence in terms of my actual guitar playing and my taste. Because I really have this theory that, you know, most people, especially, you know, people who become you know, lifers like me, you know, most people's taste gets formed at a certain time in their adolescence. You know, it's when they're most sensitive, when they're most excited. And it seems kind of indelible. Like, you can't really shake it. You can add stuff to it, but you can't shake the original appeal of the music that you fell in love with at that time. And that's been true.
Right.
I mean, you know, I can look back at tunes from that day and realize, okay, well, there was some sort of silly music that got made, but there's some serious quality music, quite a lot of it, actually. It's a surprising amount of diversity and originality, especially in terms of those bands. But and I've been able to acquire new loves. Like, you know, I was not a jazz fan when I was a kid, but I became a serious jazz fan, and I was not a classical music listener at all. And I became a serious classic music lover as well. But so I can add to that, but I will never lose, like, that music that I fell in love with first will never lose its appeal for me. So it's a really powerful thing. And I think, you know, once you're bitten by that bug, you know, it's in your system forever.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. There's so many, you know, I've interviewed so many really fabulous artists and musicians and multi-talented ones like yourself, and they always say that their parent, like, they grew up listening to, like, music, that there was music in the house. And that's the same for me. My mother was a singer, and she sang at WJOK and at some of the local piano bars. My father would take her, of course. He really wasn't really keen on the music scene. He tried to discourage Billy, my brother, the guitar man. He tried to discourage me. But getting back to this early influence, when my mother passed away 8 years ago, well, I inherited some of her albums, and I didn't even know how many she had, because there's seven in our family. And my sister had taken boxes and boxes and boxes to this antique store that incorporated, they had a sold the old albums. But I did get some really great albums from my mother, and I could not believe that my mother's was so diversified in her love for music because she listened to everything from, I mean, she had Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson. I went, Mom, first you start out, you're with Barbra Streisand, and you've got West Side Story and all the musicals, and then I see Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson. It was like, I didn't even know that about, I don't even remember listening to them. I'll tell you who I was listening to. I was sitting on the steps off of our kitchen. We had steps that led down into the basement. And, of course, you know Billy, my brother Billy. And he was playing guitar down in the cellar and would have people come over. So I would be sitting there and listening to them horsing around and talking and joking and then playing music. And he taught me my first, like, three or four chords on the guitar when I was probably 17. And I was writing poetry. Mm-hmm. And then I started writing songs, and now I've written over 100 songs. But I didn't, like you, I did not pursue a career in music. I was married and I'm raising a daughter instead. And what I got to tell you the truth, I was just not as committed and lazy. I don't know what I want to do Friday night. I'm serious. It's true. So I became what you call a troubadour. And so I sang on the streets and sang on the rocks and sang on the boardwalk and in the parks. And that's what I did. And I've had a really good career, though. And thank you that I'm going to mention it now and let you get back to talking. Thank you so much to Jeff Levine, who's with Hall & Oates. And oh, my God, well, he was first with Billy Joel, then Hall & Oates, then with Joe Cocker. And he's the one I said, he recorded six tracks on my CD, Rhyme Rocks. And I said to him,
that's right.
I don't like this lead guitar. Everything's perfect on it. Of course, the stones were a little bit too short, but I always said, now listen, Jeff, I want to be the executive record producer. I mean, you know, who did I think I was? But anyway, I should have listened to him because let him put his input, because he would have said, make that song a little long. But to get back to, he's the one I said, well, hold on, let me see what I could do. And then the next thing I know, he says, can you come in the studio? And who is there but you, yourself, John Harrington, you know, the best guitarist that I could possibly get. My brother Billy's a true jazz blues guitarist, and he plays rock, yes, but he is a jazz blues guitarist. And he was in Vermont at the time anyway, and perfect, and you did such an awesome job. And then I even said,
oh, good, thank you.
Yeah, oh, you did such a fantastic job. Oh, it couldn't have been better. You added so much to those songs. And that song, by the way, you know, some of those songs are like they're in the top 10 Reverb Nation for 7 years now, but I got into radio immediately, 3 days after I was, you know. But anyway, getting back to you, John, I want to know, so how do you go from West to Long Branch and playing all those other, I love the piano, but they said you can take lessons, either piano lessons or ice skating lessons, and I did ice skating instead. So Billy taught me the guitar, and that's fine, and I just get by playing, learning my songs and playing my songs. But getting back to you, so how does a guy from, you know, West End go from, you know, starting this, like, you know, picking up this fabulous guitar talent and then singer, songwriter, and jazz and blues, how did you go from there to being with iconic rock bands that play, that tour, you know, tour all over? How did that happen?
Well, it was kind of a long ride. I mean, I definitely was into playing the guitar as a kid, but for the first, you know, maybe 5 years that I played, I was self-taught completely, and just basically dropping the needle on records and trying to figure out what the, you know, players were playing, and then learning songs that I loved and playing them with a band locally. You know, we did a bunch of work around the neighborhood over there. But, you know, we just, and I was writing some tunes, but, you know, I wasn't doing anything like that. I was just a local guy trying to, you know, play because we loved it. And when I went to college, in New Brunswick at Rutgers,
It wasn't long before
I figured out that there were a lot of people, and I was just beginning to meet some of them at Rutgers, you know, who, unlike me, had been very disciplined practicers on their instruments. And, you know, I had kind of a knack, and I could pick it up, and I could play some basic, you know, basic rock guitar and basic blues guitar, and I could write a few tunes, and I was singing a little bit, but But, you know, I played piano and saxophone and guitar sort of equally poorly, I would say. You know, I wasn't really very good on either one, any of them. And so I decided it was time to get serious and really buckle down and learn how to play something, you know, with, you know, really study. And
right.
And because guitar was pretty much, you know, the instrument I enjoyed the most, and it was a great vehicle for songwriting. It was sort of portable, if you don't count the amp. And
right.
You know, it allowed you to sing, unlike the saxophone. You know, so it just seemed like the natural choice. And because it was so central to the music that I was in love with, you know, I couldn't imagine dropping the guitar. But I kind of could imagine, you know, focusing on it instead of, you know, playing the piano so much and the saxophone. I just sort of let them go. And for the first time, I began to study. And I was lucky enough to find the late, great Harry Leahy, a fabulous guitar teacher, quite well known, I think, among, you know, like musicians, especially in the jazz community in the East Coast. And just a fabulously generous and amazingly talented, you know, beautiful guy. So I studied with him, and he basically, he knew so much about the instrument, and he could sort of play so much that it really was like the beginning of a new world. It was like opening a new world for me. And so I, you know, I just got serious about that and took a real detour, and I sold my Les Paul gold top and my PA system, and I bought a big archtop jazz guitar with F holes, and I didn't bend a string for about 8 years or something. You know, I started getting seriously into jazz.
Right.
And I think, you know, you kind of have to go deep if you're going to learn to play anything in jazz. It's not the kind of thing you can pick up in a hurry. You know, you gotta listen deeply. There's a lot of discipline in terms of understanding the style. There's a lot of discipline in terms of technique on your instrument that's required even just to get in the game, you know? So this is not, you know, this is not an easy, quick study. So, you know, I did that
right.
for a good maybe 8 years or something. And then, one thing led to another. I eventually moved out to Indianapolis I lived out there for about 3 or 4 years. And, you know, I had been only doing some jazz gigs. I did a very short stint with Jack McDuff, the great organist, on the road. But then soon after that, because I didn't really find a lot of work opportunity in New Jersey where I was living, I decided I moved out to Indianapolis to follow a girlfriend there, and spent about 3 or 4 years out there. And it was sort of just an amazingly lucky break. I didn't expect to be even able to make a living playing music when I went out there. But about 2 weeks in, I was already working and had met a lot of the great players that were out there. And there was a jazz scene I got into, and a lot of the guys who had played with Wes Montgomery, who was from Indianapolis, were still alive.
Oh, wow.
Including his brother Buddy at the time. So I got to work with Buddy.
Uh-huh.
And I got to work with a bunch of other people who were sort of veterans of that scene, but who had never left Indianapolis. And, you know, they're on a lot of those early Wes Montgomery records, and they were still there and still active. So I was, and they loved Wes, and anybody who loved Wes, and I clearly did. And so they were very welcoming, as was a bunch of people that were working in a kind of studio scene. There were several studios that were pretty busy out there. And I think I just was in the right place at the right time. They didn't have a lot of depth in the guitar department there. So, they needed somebody who could read a little bit. And because of my
right.
training on piano and saxophone, I could do that. They needed somebody who could follow a conductor. And because I was a saxophone player in high school bands and stuff, I knew how to do that. They needed somebody who understood a variety of styles. And, you know, I had been through a phase where I was loving folk music and figuring out Joni Mitchell tunings and James Taylor, you know, picking. And so I was into that. And I also played some classical guitar, and I played I could play some jazz, I could play some rock guitar. So I began sort of buying, rock guitar gear again. I started buying amplifiers and started bending strings again, buying solid body guitars and effects and stuff. So I kind of, because it was such a welcoming, friendly scene, and because they seemed like they were in need of somebody at the time, I got a ton of work, and it was sort of like a big fish in a little pond scene for me for
right.
a little while.
That's
not
great.
Only that, but I met a lot of players who were studying at Indiana University down in Bloomington, which was not a terribly long trip from Indy, and so I met some of the people who I who ultimately went on to do great things in New York and elsewhere. But for instance, we had a band once in Bloomington playing. It was kind of a dance band at a nice club there called Jake's, and we had three front people singing. But the band itself had Kenny Aronoff on drums, who was John Mellencamp's great drummer for many years, and who's done everything. I think lately he's been working with what's the guy's name from Creedence Clearwater Valley, Fogerty, John Fogerty. And
John Fogerty. He's
been doing that.
He plays in this area sometimes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's all over the place. Well, Kenny was fabulous, and so Kenny was the drummer. My buddy Jim Beard was a keyboard player who's now been a Steely Dan bandmate for at least 8 years. And I've worked with him for many, for probably 30 or 40 years by now. And also a guy named Bob Hurst, fabulous bass player, who's now got a big teaching gig, I think, in Ann Arbor, but was also on the Tonight Show band with Branford Marsalis at one point. This was a fabulous band. Well, Chris Bode was in the band. It was a fabulous band of people who were to go on to do major work in the music biz. But this was my normal sort of weekend gig for a while down there. So it was fabulous. It was just a great little time for me. And then when I did go back to New York, I went back with quite a lot of experience that I don't really think I could have gotten in New York City, because it was much more competitive in New York, and there were many more people trying to do it and many more qualified players, so nobody needed a guitar player in New York when I moved to New York. I mean, in Indy they needed
right.
it, and I got the work, but in New York I struggled for many, many years, didn't have much work at all. And it took me probably about 10 years before I felt like, okay, now at least I know enough people, so I'm going to be working, that's cool. I'll be busy enough, but by
right.
that time I had a daughter, and she had this nasty habit of wanting to eat every day. And so, I was like really concerned about getting gigs every day. I wanted something happening every day on my calendar. If I didn't, I'd start to panic, so,
right,
but,
right.
I got into, so I did, I basically, once I got to New York, I took every kind of job I could take. I did some teaching. I tried to do some jingle writing. I put on a tuxedo and played weddings and bar mitzvahs.
Did
pick up bands on Bleecker Street, original music bands, doing that. At one point I put a band, a little trio of my own together, which ultimately became a band that I still work with and have
right. the John
recorded
Harry
five band. Records with. Yeah, it wasn't called that back then, but it's the same basic guys in the band still. And so, I was doing Broadway show work and as many sessions as I could get called for. And, so I was just taking everything, saying yes to everything, just trying to keep working. And, and actually there was a big shift that happened in 1999. I think it was about October. I got recommended by a good friend, a guy named Ted Baker, who I'd been in Broadway pits with. He's a great keyboard player, and he had been working on the record called Two Against Nature, which was the first Steely Dan studio album in 18 years since Gaucho had been made in 82 or whatever it was. And so Ted had been on all the rhythm tracking dates for that record. And they had spent a good couple of years doing that, I think. And this was sort of towards the end of the making of the record, and Donald and Walter had, I guess, decided that they could use another rhythm guitar player on a couple of tunes. So I got a call, and Ted recommended me, and I think Ted had a record I had done for a Japanese label, an instrumental sort of jazzy sounding record, and put it on and listened to it. And I got a call, and I went and did several sessions over the next several months, I think. And somewhere during those recording sessions, they told me that they would, that this record was going to come out in 2000, and they were going to try to support it with a lot of touring. And they wondered if I wanted to play guitar. So
cool.
I said, of course. You know, so that's really how it happened. It really was. Pardon me?
And that was Steely Dan?
Yeah, that was Steely Dan. That was Donald Walter. They were recording that record, Two Against Nature, which was their Grammy winner, which came out in 2000. And we did a tour of Japan that year. We did a huge PBS feature fundraiser video that was done in the old Sony studios on the West Side. And we toured Europe and toured the States, you know, at different times, not all adjacently, but it was a good year's worth of work. And it basically put me on the map as a touring musician, because I really hadn't done much traveling before. I was pretty much sitting in New York and trying to just be a freelancer there. But once I had done that touring with Steely Dan in 2000, other touring opportunities presented themselves. So I got, very shortly after that, Boz Scaggs, who was a huge Steely Dan fan.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know whether he heard the band or whether he heard about the band or whatever, but
I
got a call from Boz to play. And, you know, I did... We did some touring, I think, that year, the second year, but maybe 2001 was the first time. And I got to play with Boz. I even did some work in early 2018 again. So off and on, every once in a while, when I have time and Boz is in need, I get to do a little touring with him, which is always fabulous. He's such a consummate pro, and I think he's singing better than he ever has. And So he's got a great band now. So it's always been fun. And, you know, so that one touring thing led to another. And I also did several years of work with Bette Midler shortly after that.
Because
she is fabulous. At the time, Steely Dan was averaging about a tour every 3 years. So it really wasn't, I mean, even though it was a game changer for me in terms of the kinds of work I was getting called for, I couldn't survive just on Steely Dan income, because it was only every 3 years or so that we would go out.
Right.
So,
right.
So that was lucky thing that led to work with Spaz and with Bette Midler. That really was, it really did change my work scene completely. You know?
I'm going to interject something. It's like, I know I have people going, they absolutely love Steely Dan, and I got, you know, a lot of reaction from posting that you were beyond the show, and people were going, oh, I'm going to listen to that. And I said, no worries, all my shows are archived, so you can listen to it at any time. But the band is so phenomenal, and what I hear about Steely Dan is, why aren't they playing more? Like, you know, they're so fabulous. Oh, my God, I love Steely Dan. Why don't they tour? Why don't they play more? We want to see them, you know. So that's what I hear. And, you know, that's up to the players or the band, the head.
Well, I mean, it seems like we've been, since I started playing with the band, like I said, when I started, we were averaging a tour every 3 years. So we did one in 2000. We did one in 2003. And then it might have been as long as until 2006 or something that we did the next one. But I got to say, I mean, in 2006, I believe it was 2006, we Donald Fagen did about a month's worth of touring as a soloist, you know, solo tour. So I got to play with his band. But then later that year, I think Steely Dan played as well. And then pretty much since that time, Steely Dan has been doing some work every calendar year. It's not they picked up the pace of touring for sure, right around that time, 2006, 2007. And I think basically almost every year, with the exception of a couple of years, 2010 and 2012, when there were tours with a band called the Dukes of September Rhythm Review. I don't know if you remember that, but that was a super band with Donald singing and Boz Scaggs and Michael McDonald. So it was those three guys, but all in the same band. It wasn't like each artist did maybe three or four hits from their catalog, but mostly covers, and it was fabulous because we got to play all sorts of stuff that we don't usually play, you know, and they each got to be sidemen for the other two, you know, front guys. And so it was a lighter load in some ways, and it was kind of more fun, and we could do some cool tunes. We did some great Ray Charles, Chuck Berry, all sorts of cool stuff that everybody loved. And it was really fun. So, but for me, it meant that basically every year since then, I've been on the road with Steely Dan spinoff like the Dukes, you know, so. Last year was a pretty big year. This year is going to be a big year. So if people are not seeing Steely Dan, it's not because we aren't playing. It's because they're not looking for us.
Oh, okay. Well, when you said, the first three, I was thinking the first three, I didn't know that you had, they started touring a lot more. But anyway, I was going to say, three songs. Yeah, that's what I did Thursday night at the Brighton Bar. Like, I'm really on that level, right? But I did... I'm a legend in my own mind. I did three of my, hits. And it's funny because I really let my music go. And I have people coming to me saying, do you know that bands are singing that song Indecision? Like, and you did not play on that. I had done that in with the Nashville Players, and it was done at Quad Studio in Nashville, all the background music. And so that song has been in the top 10. In fact, I'm number 2 on Reverb Nation. Now, this is after 7 years. So it's like my music is really, and also I'm going to throw this in because this is like of my reliving of the Clemens Men because of Light of Day and seeing you and then going into singing with Jared, well, not singing with him, but singing on stage. We all did like 3-4 songs at the Brighton Bar. And then it's like, reminds me of, I was in Hawaii when Clarence was, and a friend of mine said, you got to come and see me, and I did, and he listened. For the first time, I gave Clarence Clemens it was a cassette tape, because for years I was telling Clarence, I'm a singer and a songwriter, and every time I would go, it was a man's world back when I was coming into music as far as a female. It's not like that so much anymore, thank God, but it was that way when I was coming up, and the only person that asked me to sing with him was Lance Larson. Thank you, Lance, at Stone Pony, when I went. And I'm moving around a little bit, though. And my brother Bobby was with me. God bless him. He passed away. But he said, he goes, let's get out of here. You're not singing tonight. They don't deserve to hear you anyway. My brother had a real attitude. And he goes, and I go, well, why am I not singing tonight? Of course I am. Lance asked me to. He told me I could. And he goes, no, Bruce is here. So thank you, Bruce, that you came and I didn't get to sing. But if I was pushier, I would have just stayed and sang anyway. But what I was going to say is that I have always, so I go and see Clarence, and he goes, don't wait in line. Come right up to the thing. I don't care. There were people around the corner, and I went right up, went right in with my friend Billy, who was one of Clarence's best friends his whole life, Billy Jenkins, and we went to high school. So I called him when I got to Maui. I didn't know if I'd even find him. This was years later. But to make a long story short, I gave Clarence my cassette tape, and he called me the next morning. I gave him my telephone number. We were a block away. In fact, I drove home with him an hour from Lahaina to Kihei. And he called me and he goes, oh, my God, Nancy, who is that keyboard player? I go, Clarence, are you kidding me? I've been telling you about my music all these years, and you're asking me about the keyboard player. And it happened to be Dennis Gilley, who was Mickey Gilley's nephew. And I went into a studio, and I also produced those 5 songs. And I did 5 songs. I went, and then 2 days I got called to be on the Joey Reynolds Show in New York City. And that's how I, but I knew from that night I wanted to be in radio. So I went into radio, and I'm promoting all these other artists for 6 years, and it's been wonderful, and I love it. But I let my music go. So September 13th is my 7 years in radio. I've been nominated in the category of Top Radio Personality Supporting Live Music, and I do TV personalities and like comedians and book writers and everybody. And but I'm going to just promote my own music. And, you know, maybe I don't know what's going to happen with it, but I'm supposed to go to England and sing with a band there. And who knows? I'm like Willie Nelson. It doesn't matter how old I am. I'm going to just, like, keep doing it. And I don't care. I look really young for my age, so wish me luck, because I have some really fabulous music. And, well, I think you love my music when you play
it. Yeah, good for you. That's fine. That's good. I wish you luck with it. It's never too late for an adventure.
There's always room at the top. That's what I say. And, you know, anyway, I'm doing really well, and I, you know, love promoting other artists, and I love doing the show. I'm so glad that you came on. It looks like we have 9 minutes left, and I need a few of them to promote my not-for-profits. I started this to promote the not-for-profits in the state of New Jersey and also to promote the local talent and give back. And I had been singing. I sang in Convention Hall for 2 years, the first Saturday of every month for 2 years. And then Superstorm Sandy happened, and then I had to stop that. And that's when everything happened with my album. So it's like been really a ride for me in music. And so now people are writing that I'm, you know, this big legendary singer from Asbury Park. And I love it because it's like... I go, yeah, to myself I always say it. Because, you know, people like in Europe, radio show worldwide, and it's because of you that people like in other countries, they want to hear my music. It was clever of me, and I didn't really think about it saying, oh, yeah, this is good. But Ryan Knox at Asbury Park Style is a real attraction for worldwide people because they want to listen to anything from Asbury Park. Because, of course, number one, because of the boss, but because of a lot of other people, musicians, great musicians that came out of Asbury Park, including not just musicians like yourself, but actors and, you know, comedians and, like, all kinds of talent. Asbury is a hotbed of really great talent, as is New York City, of course. But getting back to you, John.
Yeah.
I mean, and I love it, and I promoted the heck out of it. Every time I put my album up there, I always put featured artists, Dawn Harrington, and Jeff Levine,
Thank you.
You know. Oh, I always do. I mean, because that's like, that pulls people into saying, we want to hear John, and then in the meantime, we'll hear Nancy, too. But, yeah, I've been doing nothing. Like, my song's number two, I just can't knock it to number one on, and Reverb Nation, of course, is like, I'm not on in Rolling Stone or anything, but, you know, anything is possible. It's just like you just have to keep plugging along. Yeah, I have to get out there with my guitar more often and play, like I did Thursday night at the Brighton Bar. And so I had been there only 3 times, once to see the Red Bank Rockers, then to see you and Jeff, and then to promote Jared Clemens, who I met last year. And anyway, it's a trip, the music business. But I was very discouraged from it, and so was Billy. So I'm surprised he really, you know, went as far as he did, and, you know, was the lead guitarist with, you know, James Cotton Blues Band, and then with Clarence Clemens and Red Bank Rockers for a year and a half. And of course, I always say this, and it's true, he did say to Bruce, no thank you. You know, he was 5 years older than Bruce, and he was ready. He was not available, really. He was having another child. He had his own cheap rock business, and he's a jazz blues lover. That's his thing, really. He'll play rock and roll. He does play with Bruce when Bruce plays here. He did the upstage show at the Paramount a few years ago, and he plays with Bruce every time there's the opportunity. My inspirations in music were my mother, and I sang in all the little local bars at the piano bars. And I wish I played piano, because I'd love to. I still want to play piano, but I don't know if that's going to happen. guitars, it was easier for me to just play, to write music on. And I agree, I think that the guitar is easier to write music. So, and the Beatles songs, forget that. I mean, all of their songs were only like four chords, I mean, pretty much. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I mean, maybe some of their later music was more than four chords, but it seemed to me I picked up the guitar and could play almost all of their songs with four chords. And not bar chords either. But John, find me, and I was a good girl. I really kept my mouth shut a lot, which is good. I allowed you. You talked. I didn't allow you. I mean, that's what it's supposed to be. The guest is supposed to talk the most. But you don't know me. I have chatter teeth in front of me. Remember those chatter teeth? They're red, and you wind them up, and they make noise. I'm holding them right now. Sometimes I play them and let people hear them. But I'm such a talker that for a long time, people couldn't. They'd have to be interrupt me. That's what they told me to do on the Joey Reynolds show. Interrupt him. You won't get a word in edgewise. And anyway, he made me play that song in Decision. He said, "You make sure that girl brings a guitar and sings that song in Decision." So, yeah, wish me luck with this song in Decision. It's got to go somewhere. I might even go into the studio again and like re-record it. I'm going to send it to you. Can I text it to the number that you gave me? And listen to a few of those songs. And would you give me some advice on which songs you that maybe should be redone? Because I should go into the studio and do a few new songs, two new songs, and one song. Let me know if you think Indecision should be redone to really make it a hit. I don't know. I think it's a hit now, but maybe I'm wrong. So
I'll check it out. Send it to me.
Oh, I would love that. That would be so great. And, of course, I'm going to ask Jeff the same thing, Jeff Levine, because I admire him so much. He's such a great, talented guy. So, anyway, so what else? What are your future, your immediate future plans as far as, anything you want to promote?
Well, the thing I'd like to promote is a fabulous new instructional channel I have. There's a website called truefire.com, which is basically a storehouse of the most it's an incredibly deep, vast collection of mostly guitar instructional video stuff. And if you go to their first page, truefire.com, and you look on the channels tab, you can scroll through a bunch of educators who are all doing this new thing called the True Fire Channel. And I've just launched one, which basically is a place I post lots of videos and all types of stuff, from instructional stuff, including like lots of guitar technique stuff and music theory and ear training, all sorts of stuff, and, soloing strategies and all sorts of stuff. Plus some more fun, lighter fare, like gear talk and some, stuff about like my favorite guitar solos, my favorite albums of all time, things like that. So it's a pretty vast, collection of lots of more like less formal, more informal kind of, videos.
Right.
So basically anything and everything musical about me is going to be posted on that channel, and you can subscribe for, it's got an introductory rate of like $5 a month right now. So it's like as cheap as a Starbucks cup
very
of coffee.
Affordable.
You can,
right. And
very affordable.
John,
so
I did, John, by the way, I did promote that in your promotion. I don't know if you looked at promotion, but
no, I didn't see it, but I'm glad. Thank you.
Yeah. Get a chance. Just go on Facebook on either my Nancy Ryan page or Ryan Hawks or Asbury Park Cell. And it was promoted worldwide on 150 group pages on 22 group Springsteen sites worldwide, and LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. And it has that picture of you, and it tells so it shows people to go to that site of the True Fire site.
Yeah, because I'm excited about that because that's
homework.
Brand new, and it's going to be fun, I think. And outside of that, I've got a trip coming up with Steely Dan. We're going to Glasgow, Manchester, Edinburgh, no, not Edinburgh,
wonderful.
Manchester, Birmingham, London, and Dublin. So we got that coming up. And after that, I'm going to Asia with Madeline Peru. She's a fabulous singer I've been working with for about a dozen years now. We're going to Beijing. We're going to Seoul, South Korea. We're going to Tokyo, and we're going to Honolulu. Thank goodness, I'm going to get a few days off there. I hope so.
Great. Listen, anything. We have like 10 seconds to go, and I haven't promoted my not-for-profits. But if there's anything that you want in the, because now I go back and I do the whole thing again, like all of the promotion again, and the interview is posted everywhere again. So it's a very time-consuming for me, but I love doing it. And if there's anything in particular you want added to that, other than just what is your, you have a Facebook page, right? And all of your information is on that Facebook page. I'm just going to send them to your Facebook page.
Yes, and we got
page.
We got a website too.
And
it's just johnharrington.com. So
johnharrington.com. I got it for sure. I will post those two things so people can see what your upcoming events are. John, it has been fabulous having you on. I really enjoyed it.
All right, well, thank you.
I'm sure everyone else loved hearing your story. And you know,
I will. You too. All right.
Yeah,
keep on rocking Asbury Park, Nancy.
Let me know when you're in Asbury Park. I'll come and see you, and I'll do. Anytime I see you doing something, I also promote it again. I always go. Like once you're on my show, then every time I see you doing something, I promote it. You know, go to the episode. So, all right.
Well, good. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much, John. And as I said, thank you so much for being a guest on my show. It was really great. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, Nancy. All right. You take care.
You're welcome.
Right.
You're welcome. Well, Susan, I thank her too. I should send her an email. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye. That was the wonderful John Harrington, a lead guitarist with Steely Dan and the John Harrington Band. And as you heard, so many other phenomenal people. So my time is up, and I have got to do a promo on my not-for-profits. And my list for them is in the other room. Like, that's kind of silly of me to leave that in the other room. But they are, I should know them by heart by now, so if I miss anyone, I apologize. But they are Mr. Steve Brigham, and he is with Tent City of Lakewood. Mr. Tim McClune, Holiday Express and Restaurateur. He owns many, many fine restaurants, and one in particular that I love is the Supper Club, and then downstairs in Asbury Park right on the boardwalk. McClune's there, and then in Pier Village. Also, the New Jersey Ocean County, it's Ocean and Monmouth County Food Bank, and that's also a wonderful, wonderful not-for-profit organization. All of these people, by the way, have been on my show, Hometown Heroes. Michael Schwartz, I believe that is. If I get this wrong, please forgive me. I can't believe that I left my little red book with all my not-for-profits in the living room. Tupac, which is the overdose prevention organization, and that is Mr. Paul Ressler, and he also puts out a day-night, a weekly newsletter about the Overdose Prevention Corporation. I'm trying to think of the rest of my not-for-profits. I used to do City of Angels, and I still will, even though Allison Soho is into some new promotions, but City of Angels is still available, and you can find all of these people on Facebook. So just remember that. If you need to find a special organization, go there. The New Jersey Rescue Mission, which is on Memorial Drive in Asbury Park, they do wonderful things. And in addition, they have a huge thrift shop right next door, and they're right on Memorial Drive in Asbury Park. Nick Clemens. I promote Nick Clemens, and it's called, his not-for-profit is Kicking It, Bullying, We're Kicking It. And so, you know, like I said, you can go and check out Nick Clemens on Facebook. He was on my show twice. There's got to be a few more. I know it. Gregory and Karen Nixon, Helping Hands of New Jersey. And they did a lot of great work and even invested a lot of their own money after Superstorm Sandy. Oh, boy. I'm knowing that I may have forgotten someone. But if I did, I apologize, and I will definitely have my list in front of me my next show. And, you know, I'll maybe do a little shout out, actually, in a comment section after this, after the show, a separate comment. I'll list my not-for-profits. So, without further ado, okay, I am signing off because my time is up for listening. And everybody, I want you to know that all my shows are archived, you know, so you can just go to www.blogtalkradio.com, Ryan Rocks It, Asbury Park Style, and scroll down. I've had some absolutely awesome, awesome entertainers, comedians, authors, TV personalities, you name it, they've been on my show. And thank you all for joining me on Ryan Rocks It, Asbury Park Style. Bye, everybody. Till next time. I'm only doing one show a month now, up until September 13th. That will be my 7 years. And then there will be lots of new news about Ryan Rocks. Okay, bye, everybody. Have a wonderful, wonderful week. And stay warm. Bye-bye.